From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, we'll take a look at several corruption trials set for 2018 involving nine of the governor's former associates. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on that and a sexual harassment and an assault claim that has reached the Cuomo administration. And we'll tell you about a new report on poverty in the U.S. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Several corruption trials are set for 2018 after a scandal involving nine of Governor Cuomo's former associates who worked on his administration's economic development projects. Advocates say they will continue to push for reforms to prevent such problems from happening again. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
At an assembly hearing, Alex Camarda with the government reform group Reinvent Albany admonished lawmakers. He told them he's disappointed that they failed to act on measures to change the way billions of dollars in state contracts are solicited and awarded, even though several of Governor Cuomo's former associates are facing federal trials on corruption charges next year.
In fact, the legislature did not pass any legislation despite state economic development programs being engulfed in the biggest bid rigging scandal in state history.
Among those on trial, a former top aide to the governor and the former head of the State University of New York's nanotech science program. Reinvent Albany and other groups are seeking several changes. One would reinstate the state controller's oversight over economic development contracts. That authority was taken away in a measure proposed by Cuomo and agreed to by the legislature back in 2012. Another would create a database of deals. It would list the status of all of the state's economic development contracts and measure how successful they've been. Camarda, speaking after the hearing, says that it's not rocket science. He says two media organizations were able to collect and compile the data using the Freedom of Information Law.
The state has no transparency in terms of being able to look up individual companies or entities and find out what they get in the totality of state economic development benefits. There's no website that does that. There have been some that have been created by the press, but they're point-in-time snapshots. They are not updated routinely.
Cuomo has proposed his own reforms. He wants to set up a special inspector general's office within his own administration to keep an eye on contracts. Critics, however, say any watchdog entity needs to be independent of the governor. Cuomo's bills did not advance in the legislature. At the hearing, the chair of the Assembly Committee on Economic Development, Robin Schimminger, said that he backs the reforms and that they were approved by his committee earlier this year.
As the old saying, you're preaching to the choir. You're looking at members of the Economic Development Committee here. And not a single one of those bills, proposals that you mentioned have been blocked in our committee.
But the measures stalled. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie, as well as the leader of the state Senate, John Flanagan, expressed support for the bills last spring, but they ended the legislative session without voting on them. Camarda says advocates plan to make the reforms a major focus in the new session, which begins in January.
It's an election year. There's going to be the trials. All the good government groups are going to be advocating for this. We're not going away.
He says the legislature should not approve any more money for economic development projects until the process becomes more transparent. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, we learned this week that
a woman named Lisa Marie Cater alleges that Sam Hoyt, former Buffalo Assemblyman, got her a job at the DMV and then leveraged it to manipulate, sexually harass, and sexually assault her. Cater complained to Governor Cuomo's office about her treatment at the hands of Hoyt on at least six occasions, but says she was only met with hostility and indifference. The governor's office disputes that claim.
Well, look, we've seen some real game changer here in terms of people who complain. In the older days, David, people were saying, well, I can't, I'm afraid, I'm this and that. But we have seen now a spate of people making those complaints. In light of the modern day standard, the Cuomo people might be faulted, I'll tell you right now, because she says, and if it is true that she did complain on different occasions to the governor's office about Hoyt, then something should have happened. The fact of the matter is, when he left to do other things, but now we know that this series of accusations took their toll, must have taken their toll. So, you know, it's complicated, but in the end, if he did what she says he did, there really is no excuse.
In light of several corruption trials set for the coming year after the scandal involving nine of Governor Cuomo's former associates who worked on economic development projects, and of course, we've talked over and over again about how the state controller, Thomas DiNapoli, lost his ability to review these kinds of economic development contracts.
You know, David, when Andrew Cuomo does something that is good, like his gun control legislation, I'm going to be all over saying how courageous he was in that case. But then he goes and does something really despicable. And it was despicable to take the constitutional officer, the comptroller of the state of New York, and a good one, Tom DiNapoli, who he doesn't happen to like for whatever reason, because he doesn't play well in the sandbox with others, and to take away his pre-audit function and to get the legislature to go along. It was absolutely disgusting. There are those who think that these scandals, which are going to now all come to light as his closest cronies go on trial, whether or not they will implicate the governor or not, nobody really knows. But they were his closest associates. And a lot of people think that had those pre-audit functions been still implemented, there would have been no corruption on the level that we have seen it and that is now about to appear before the voters of the state of New York. So it was disgusting that he did it. It was disgusting that his legislative partners did it. It's the kind of thing that makes everybody hold their nose and say, this is just awful. How do they get away with this? And what's more, you know, when all of this came to light, the natural reaction was, well, okay, give them back those powers that you stupid fools took away from them. They say, no, no, we're going to appoint some of our own people to watch it. Right. Will it ever be different?
Legislative Gazette political observer Ellen Chartok. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York U.S. Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer and Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney were in Orange County this week urging the Air Force to designate Stewart Air National Guard Base the number one cleanup project in the country. The two Democrats made their call at Washington Lake, Newburgh's main drinking water supply, where toxic PFOS contamination was found in the spring of 2016. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn explains.
Schumer says there is an amendment in the defense bill awaiting President Donald Trump's signature to help the Air Force remediate PFOS and PFOA contamination, like the PFOS contamination at Stewart Air National Guard Base, which was declared a state Superfund site in August 2016.
We need the Air Force to designate Stewart as the top cleanup site in all these United States.
Schumer, U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, and Maloney, all Democrats, pushed the amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act that includes $323 million in federal funding for the U.S. Air Force's Environmental Restoration Fund. They say this will allow for the identification, investigation, and cleanup of former waste disposal sites on military property, like Stewart Air National Guard Base. Again, Schumer.
The residents of Newburgh, Orange County have seen so much foot-dragging and finger-pointing since the contamination was uncovered. It's time for the Air Force to make up for its past mistakes and put us number one. If they did, this budget will be finished by December 31st, and they can start allocating money early next year.
And here's Maloney.
I'm absolutely delighted that the bill on the president's desk right now is going to enforce the old rule that you break it, you buy it. And the Air Force and the Department of Defense broke this water system. This bill is going to make them pay to clean it up. That's as it should be. The residents of Newburgh, citizens of Orange County, did not create this mess and should not bear the cost of cleaning it up.
Schumer says he has spoken with top military officials.
We got the legislation passed. I've talked to the Secretary of the Air Force and the Secretary of Defense and said to them, if I get this in the bill, I want Newburgh to come first, and they did not dissent, so now we need them to follow through.
Plus, he says,
Mattis said to me, this is our responsibility and we have to be responsible for it. So now they're not denying responsibility. They just have to put their money where their mouth is.
He refers to Secretary of Defense James Mattis. Again, Maloney.
It's very important that the Defense Department cover the remediation costs that have already been incurred.
Yes.
And part of this legislation is also directing the Department of Defense to tell the Congress what additional authorities, if any, they need to pay for all of the work that had to be done before now, after now, start to finish. And that, together with the help from the state, is going to fully address this issue at no cost to the local residents.
And Maloney talked about another part of the defense bill related to PFOS contamination.
My legislation, called the Investing in Testing Act, is also part of the defense authorization bill. This will immediately require the Centers for Disease Control to conduct a 2-year study on what the heck the long-term health effects are of PFOAs and PFOSs, because we don't have good science on that.
A state-funded permanent carbon filtration system for Washington Lake is near ready and expected to be fully operational in December. The lake has been offline as a drinking water source, and the city has been drawing its drinking water from the Catskill Aqueduct.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Meanwhile, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and Montgomery County, New York, have entered a new agreement to remove asbestos contamination from the site of the former Beechnut Baby Food Factory in Canajoharie. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports.
The dilapidated Beechnut Factory is a 1-million-square-foot eyesore in the Mohawk Valley village of Canajoharie. But a new voluntary agreement between Montgomery County and the EPA allows for the removal of contaminated debris from the site, which could lead to redevelopment. The county plans to remove 2,500 tons of material currently in piles, a roll-off container, and partial exterior walls. EPA, which first assessed the property in 2015, took steps to stabilize the contamination that was left by the site's previous owners. Montgomery County Executive Matt Ausenfort is ready to get to work on the project.
More important than an economic development issue, this is a public safety issue. So we can get these piles taken care of, and then we can move towards demolition and remediation of the rest of the site.
EPA Regional Administrator Pete Lopez said in a statement, quote, "Even though the county is not legally responsible for cleaning up the site, we are so pleased that we found a willing partner to be part of the solution," end quote. Lopez said the approach reinforces EPA's efforts to streamline the Superfund process. The unsightly debris has been sitting on the property for years. In 2013, after Beechnut vacated the facility, the site was sold to TD Development. The factory was then reportedly sold to a company partner. Since, more than $1 million in taxes have gone unpaid. EPA pushed for B&B Recycling LLC and Beechnut to clean up the site. Beechnut refused, saying the contamination issues were created after it sold the property. EPA says it is evaluating its enforcement options related to the two companies. Recently, Montgomery County was able to finalize the foreclosure process and claim ownership of the campus that takes up about a third of downtown Canajoharie, including the waste piles. Ausenfort says the cleanup authorized this week is the first step in a long process.
And to be able to get this done shows that, you know what, we're heading in the right direction. There's a lot more positive things to come. And hopefully, you know, within a matter of hopefully just a few short years, we can really do something special on that site.
The community has been brainstorming ideas for the site for some time. In the summer of 2016, local officials were joined by a Washington, D.C.-based architectural organization for a tour of the structure. Much of the facility remains intact, though there are some issues that range from broken or stolen fixtures to black mold. While on the tour, Bill Rohr, senior planner with the Montgomery County Business Development Center, did not rule out any options for the future of the factory.
If we get money to demolish it, if we can get money to rehab it, if we can get the investors, that's whatever the most pragmatic way is. If we don't do this, the consequences are incredibly serious. because this dominates the downtown, dominates the whole village.
Montgomery County has secured funding to redevelop the site, including a $500,000 Restore New York grant. As the first steps toward cleanup are put into motion, Austin Ford is excited about the level of cooperation with those involved, the village, town, county, state, and federal governments.
And nowadays, how often do you see all those entities, Democrats, Republicans, different layers of government, all working together with a common goal? And that to me is what is so exciting.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Catskill, New York is hoping to become a bigger player in the so-called creative economy. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has that story.
It's being heralded as affordable, beautiful, commutable. Arts and performance circles are buzzing about the town and village that was one of the East Coast's top tourist destinations in the 1940s and 50s, a feat patrons hope will be eclipsed in the coming years. Maureen Sager, project director of ACE, the Alliance for the Creative Economy, sees Catskill reawakening as new businesses pop up all along Main Street.
That's the effect of the arts. The arts aren't just fine arts or galleries or performance spaces. They're the economic drivers for all this kind of activity. That's why we include them all in this definition of the creative economy.
The former American Dance Institute paid $1.2 million for a multi-building facility along Water Street that once was a waterfront lumberyard. Plans entail building a theater along with artist accommodations and amenities. The total price to rehab Lumberyard is pegged around $20 million. Some of the financial power behind the new initiative is coming from Washington. In September, U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer dropped in to check out Lumberyard's new digs.
This is one of the most exciting projects that I have seen because the benefits that will accrue to Catskill, to Greene County, and to the whole northern Hudson Valley will be terrific.
Although Lumberyard had just closed on a $5 million loan before Schumer's visit, he promised more help from D.C.
I'll help them pursue all different kinds of federal grants. They've gotten some already. I know they're going to apply for many more. And I will go to bat and use whatever clout I have in Washington to make it happen.
Construction is set to begin before month's end at the Water Street site. Sager notes that the creative economy is the sixth largest employer in the capital region.
There are all sorts of people, designers, media people, filmmakers, marketing firms. Anything that's making creative content is all part of this ecosystem.
Lumberyard officials say Governor Andrew Cuomo previously pledged $800,000 for the project. Facilities are expected to be ready for use by the end of 2018. ACE held an event last week partnering Lumberyard with the Thomas Cole National Historic Site, representing the newest and oldest organizations in Catskill focused on the arts. Betsy Jacks is executive director at the Cole site.
Catskill Village has a highly advantageous geography because it is located in the wedge of land in between Catskill Creek and the Hudson River. So we have a lot of waterfront. This is part of what attracted the artist Thomas Cole to the area nearly 200 years ago, that scenic beauty. Fast forward to the 21st century, and the creek frontage in Catskill was dotted with empty warehouse buildings that are now the source of an explosion of new growth, including the lumberyard. We had 5 ribbon cuttings in the village of Catskill last week. Catskill was the best-kept secret in the Hudson Valley, but it's not a secret anymore.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
A new report issued by United Way takes a fresh look at who is living in poverty in the U.S. The Alice Report was the focus of a recent forum at Mountain Lake PBS in Plattsburgh. Pat Bradley picks up the story.
ALICE is the acronym for Asset Limited, Income Constrained, Employed. United Ways in several states, including New York, have issued reports assessing the levels and struggles of the working poor. During a Mountain Lake PBS forum this week, United Way of the Adirondack Region CEO John Bernardi said the report provides a new lens on poverty.
What we're seeing now is working families, people that are employed, that are struggling to make ends meet despite their efforts to work 2 and 3 jobs sometimes per household, yet they're close to the edge of that financial cliff. So we're seeing a very different face of poverty, and the ALICE report provides some very enlightening and interesting data in which to view the way poverty looks today. And the demographic that we've seen growing is this poverty in terms of working families and household incomes that do not allow families to make ends meet without assistance.
The report finds that 44% of households across New York live below the ALICE threshold. Yet Bernardi says federal guidelines find only 15% of New York households in poverty.
The federal government would have us believe that if you make in excess of $12,000 a year, then you don't live in poverty. And if you're a family of 4 and you're making $23,000 a year, then you don't live in poverty. Well, we know from the ALICE report and the ALICE data that actually a family of 4 in this region would need to make almost $60,000 per household to live without assistance. And an individual would need to make right around $23,000. So the gap between the federal poverty limit and the ALICE threshold is considerable.
The ALICE report notes the cost of living outpaces wages, and economic conditions for ALICE families worsened between 2007 and 2014. It also finds while assistance helps, it does not create financial stability. Sandra Weber moved to Elizabethtown in the Adirondacks about 5 years ago.
As I was contemplating moving up here full-time, I looked at how much money do I need per year to survive, and I wanted to let you know your statistics are right on because I came up with $24,000. Second of all, earlier in my life, I was an ALICE. I was a single mother raising 2 daughters for about 10 years. Part of what's going on there is not only a financial crisis within the family, but an emotional crisis. And so everything we can do to help to alleviate that stress within the family, because it's really that, I think, that stress that creates even more of an obstacle to success for that family as much as the finance.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. That's for program number 1747. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.